Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're really digging into something that's, well, everywhere right now. How AI isn't just tweaking, but really fundamentally re-sculpting the whole design and development journey. You know, from that first, maybe fuzzy concept, all the way to shipping actual code. Our mission today is to unpack Phil Warnath's really insightful article, The Designer Developer's AI Toolkit, From Concept to Production. We're going to look at how bringing together multiple AI tools isn't just like a neat trick, but actually creates the surprisingly seamless and efficient workflow. And right off the bat, we need to tackle something Phil calls the 70% problem. It's a key challenge, really central to using AI effectively here.
That's exactly right. And I think it's super important to get this up front. The real power isn't in one single magic AI tool. It's about how these different tools work together. Synergy is the key word. And maybe even more importantly, how they amplify human skills, not replace them. That's what we'll explore today.
Okay, let's dive into that 70% problem then. What exactly is it? And why is it so crucial for anyone trying to integrate AI into design and development?
Well, the 70% problem, as product manager Peter Yang kind of framed it, is this observation that, yeah, non-technical folks can use AI to whip up something that looks like a working prototype, maybe 70% of the way there, incredibly fast. But hitting that last 30%, that's where you hit this wall of, well, diminishing returns if you're only relying on the AI. Because that last stretch isn't just polish, it's fundamental stuff. It's robust architecture, it's deep design thinking, it's understanding subtle user experience needs, things that demand real human expertise. AI is great for the initial structure of the interface, but bridging that gap to something that works reliably for real users, that's the human element.
You know, that makes me think of something I read from Adi Osmani and Gurjali Oris. They had this quote, senior engineers use AI to speed up what they already know how to do, while juniors risk building house of cards code by accepting AI output without critical review. That phrase, house of cards code, that really lands, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And it perfectly captures what some call the knowledge paradox.
Mm.
AI lowers the barrier to entry for sure, but it disproportionately benefits those who already have deep domain knowledge. Experienced people, the seniors, they use AI to accelerate tasks they already understand. They spot the flaws, the potential house of cards moments quickly. Beginners, though, they might not have that context. They risk accepting flawed, brittle, or just inefficient AI output because they don't know what they don't know.
And building up technical debt without even realizing it.
Exactly. Massive technical debt. Very quickly, it can sink a project down the line.
Okay, so given the 70% problem, this double-edged sword where AI helps but needs careful guidance, how does Phil Warnath actually suggest we navigate this? What's his workflow?
Phil's approach is, I think, really smart, because he doesn't expect one tool to do it all. He breaks the process down. It's a four-stage workflow with specific AI tools chosen for what they do best at each stage. So first is concept development, mainly using ChatGPT. Then comes structural prototyping with V0. After that, adding the brand and interaction layer with Figma Make. And finally, the crucial production refinement using VS Code, probably with tools like Copilot or Cursor integrated.
All right, let's break that down. Stage one, concept development with ChatGPT. Most ideas start messy, right? Just a brain dump. How does ChatGPT help clean that up?
That's precisely its role here. It acts like a tireless, structured thinking partner. You throw your rough ideas, your assumptions, everything at it, and ChatGPT helps turn that into a structured brief, clarifies requirements. Crucially, it's great at requirements extraction. It asks the questions you haven't thought of, uncovering those hidden assumptions or gaps in your thinking.
Yeah.
It can also help brainstorm brand identity elements, visual direction, tone of voice, and even map out basic user journeys.
Phil gives a great example, prompt pattern too. Something like, I'm designing a financial wellness app for freelancers. Help me develop a brief, including core problems, key features, design principles, tech considerations, and importantly, ask me clarifying questions.
Mm-hmm.
That last part, ask me clarifying questions, that feels like the key, doesn't it?
It really is the secret sauce, I think. ChatGPT excels at that structured Socratic questioning. It forces you, the human, to articulate your thinking more clearly, to consider different angles. It makes the concept much more robust before you even touch a design tool or write a line of code. It's like having a very methodical sounding board.
Okay, concept solidified. What's next? How do we get from that brief to something that actually, you know, works?
Stage two, that's structural prototyping with V0. So V0 is Vercel's AI front-end builder. The focus here is getting the first functional version up, not just pretty pictures, but layouts, actual components like the building blocks of your app and the basic data structure. So you use it to generate, say, React components, maybe with TypeScript for better code safety, handle basic state management. It can even draft database schemas, the blueprint for your data, and the CRUD endpoints, the ways your app will create, read, update, delete data.
CRUD.
Right. Yeah. Plus, it sets up responsive defaults, thinks about reusable architecture a bit, and can even spit out a basic readme.md file for documentation.
So it tackles that scary blank page problem head on. What's the main advantage here? Speed.
Speed is definitely a huge part of it. Its superpower is generating code that's often surprisingly close to production quality, at least structurally. It gives you a testable skeleton super fast, something tangible you can actually click around in and start iterating on.
But there's a catch, I assume.
Oh, for sure. The limitation is that the code it generates still needs significant human review and refactoring. Naming conventions, optimal logic, maybe better architectural patterns, that all needs a human eye. But for this stage, getting something functional quickly is the priority. You accept that trade-off.
Got it. So you have the functional bones from a V0. How do you add the flesh, make it feel polished, make it feel like a real product? That's Figma Make, right? Stage 2.2, or maybe stage 3, depending how you count.
Exactly. Stage 2.2 or 3, depending on the flow. Branded interaction with Figma Make. This is where you inject the personality, the polish, the slick interactions. The approach here is context-rich prompting. You feed Figma, make the V0 components, maybe the documentation, the ChatGPT brief, give it all the background info.
Okay.
Then you use it for exploring variations on components, making them look and feel just right. You can also use it for more playful stuff, exploring immersive ideas, unique landing page concepts, maybe even mini games like Phil mentions. And it's great for replacing placeholder lorem ipsum text with realistic looking copy and data, making the prototype feel much more real.
It sounds great for exploring possibilities quickly, but what's the reality check? It's not generating production code here either, is it?
Definitely not. That's the crucial distinction. Figma Make is fantastic for exploration and visualization. It helps you layer that brand identity and interaction design onto the functional skeleton you built with V0.
Right.
Its strength is in rapidly iterating on the look and feel, the user experience layer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's generating design artifacts, essentially, not code ready for deployment. Using it after V0 ensures you're polishing something buildable.
Okay, makes sense. Skeleton from V0, polish from Figma Make. Now, stage 4, production refinement. This feels like where the 70% problem really bites. This is the real engineering part, moving into VS Code with tools like Copilot.
This is absolutely where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
And yes, it's where that final difficult 30% gets tackled. This stage involves a ton of critical work. Migrating the code, maybe. Definitely refactoring V0's output into cleaner, more maintainable components. Implementing serious performance optimization, things like lazy loading assets, setting up caching strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Ensuring proper accessibility is huge. ARIA labels, keyboard navigation, semantic HTML. AI often struggles here, generating lots of divs.
Right. Accessibility often needs that human touch.
Absolutely. Then there's robust error handling, writing comprehensive tests, unit tests, integration tests, setting up the whole DevOps pipeline for continuous integration and deployment. And this loops right back to that Osmani and Oroz quote, "Senior engineers use AI to speed up what they already know." This stage demands that senior level judgment, that experience, that architectural foresight. AI tools like Copilot can assist, but they can't lead.
So the difference between just a cool demo that falls over under pressure and actual robust software really comes down to this stage.
100%. It's all in these details. The architecture, the performance tuning, security considerations, maintainability. That's what makes software last and scale. AI accelerates parts of it.
Yep.
But the core decision making, the quality control, that's still deeply human.
So reflecting on this whole workflow, where does AI genuinely speed things up and where might it actually become a hindrance if you're not careful? What's the human element we always need to keep front and center?
Yeah, it's a good question. AI is fantastic for iterating quickly on known patterns. Standard UI elements, basic CRUD stuff. It churns that out fast. It's great for boilerplate code, getting the basic structure of a component or function down. And fantastic for brainstorming, exploring variations, generating placeholder content, realistic text, data, even draft documentation.
Okay, so the repetitive stuff, the known quantities, where does it struggle?
It really struggles with genuine novelty. Truly new user experience patterns often require human creativity, what Phil calls creative AI direction. You have to guide it very specifically. Complex state management is another tricky area. Intricate user flows, edge cases, nuanced error states. AI can get lost there.
Performance optimization too, you mentioned?
Definitely. That requires systems thinking, understanding the whole picture, which AI isn't great at yet. Accessibility, as we said, often needs manual correction. And fundamentally, strategic product decisions, understanding deep user needs, business goals, market context. That's way outside AI's lane right now.
And we keep coming back to this knowledge paradox. Experienced people get a bigger boost than beginners.
It really seems that way. The expert uses AI as a powerful assistant, constantly evaluating and refining its output based on their deep knowledge. The beginner, lacking that foundation, risks taking the AI's suggestions uncritically, potentially building something fragile or hard to maintain.
So what are the key lessons Phil pulls out from actually using this workflow? Any practical tips?
Yeah, he offers some great ones. First, start small and stay modular. Give the AI focused, well-defined tasks. It works much better that way.
Okay.
Second, trust but verify, always. Treat AI output like code from a smart junior dev, potentially brilliant, but definitely needs careful review.
Good analogy.
Third, focus your human effort on that hard 30%. That's where your value lies. Handling tricky edge cases, designing thoughtful error messages, optimizing for real-world performance, ensuring deep accessibility, crafting maintainable architecture.
And the last one.
Preserve design craft. As AI handles more implementation grunt work, the human touch, the attention to detail, the empathy for user needs, the creation of truly delightful experiences becomes even more important. That's the differentiator.
This is about more than just tools, isn't it? Phil touches on a broader philosophy here.
He does, yeah. He shares a bit about his own journey, how he was initially put off programming because it felt like this very rigid binary thinking domain. But then he encountered thinkers like Douglas Rushkoff, who frame technology differently, not just as math, but as a cultural medium, a way to express ideas and make them tangible.
Interesting shift in perspective.
It really is. It reframes coding as a creative act, accessible to more than just math geniuses. And it connects to how these AI tools are breaking down the old silos between designer and developer. It's becoming a more integrated, holistic way of creating.
That really connects with quotes like Andre Carpathy saying, "The hottest new programming language is English," and Osmani and Oris again, "Use AI to accelerate, not replace your judgment." It's about empowering human intention.
Exactly. Used wisely, AI helps us work smarter, not just faster. It frees us up from some of the tedious stuff.
Yeah.
So we can focus on the truly important things. Understanding people, solving meaningful problems, and building experiences that actually matter.
And looking ahead, we hear about agentic design tools, AI that can plan and act more autonomously. Does that change this human-AI collaboration picture?
It's definitely the next wave.
Mm-hmm.
AI tools that can take a high-level goal and figure out the steps, iterate, maybe even conduct some basic research. But interestingly, I don't think it replaces the need for human expertise. If anything, it heightens it.
How so?
Well, the more powerful and autonomous the tool, the more critical human oversight becomes. You need someone to set the right goals, define the constraints, evaluate the output critically against quality standards, and ensure the AI is aligned with the actual user needs and ethical considerations.
So steering the ship becomes even more crucial.
Precisely. The goal isn't just to generate more code or more designs faster. It's about building better software, creating better experiences. AI is a powerful lever, but we still need to decide where to apply the force and what better actually means. That's on us.
So wrapping up this deep dive, the core message feels pretty clear. AI isn't about replacing skills, it's about amplifying them.
That's the key takeaway.
Real value emerges when you master both the tools and the timeless principles of good design, solid engineering, and understanding people. It's human intelligence guiding artificial intelligence.
Well said.
And that leaves us, and you listening, maybe a final thought to chew on. If AI really does free us up by automating the routine, making building faster, what kinds of harder problems, what deeper human needs, what truly meaningful experiences should we now prioritize? What does building better look like in this new landscape?